All right. Thanks for joining me, Nick. Great to have you on the show.
Great to be here, Dan. Thanks for having me.
We've had some really great people on the show so far, and looking at the kind of industry from lots of different perspectives. But I think you're the first one from a kind of sports business kind of publisher side of it. You know, we've had the kind of goal.com side, so the football publishing, and the kind of to consumer, the football fan, but you're the first kind of B2B one, which obviously when the industry is taking quite a hit, there's no live sport going on. What's it been like from your end, kind of from March when everything started to kind of get cancelled?
I mean, the main thing we noticed, a part of the impact it has to sort of our business directly, to the wider industry, was really just that we stopped seeing commercial deals getting done. Each day we were covering a raft of deals happening in sponsorship and in broadcasting and across the wider industry. And, you know, literally that just froze up effectively, you know, immediately. And we haven't really seen that pick up at all from that point. So what we've had to do also as a media business is try and focus more on the other stories and how people are tackling the situation, how people are strategizing to deal with what's going on now and also the longer term. But yeah, really it was just, you could just see that the momentum that the industry had was just, it stopped on a dime, and was tough for it to, it's still in a situation where it's nowhere near getting back to business as normal.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine there were some interesting conversations had behind the scenes with, because obviously a main bit of business, you know, you've got the editorial side, the website, and the very good newsletter as well, which I subscribe to. But you've also got the events, which is a huge part of it. And Sports Pro Live is probably one of your kind of flagship event of the year, which was scheduled to go ahead in April. I mean, did you kind of think, okay, this isn't going to happen?
If I look back, I can remember sort of all happening quite quickly. We actually had an event scheduled for March in Singapore. And obviously with COVID-19 kicking off in Asia, we started watching things probably a little bit earlier than perhaps people in the UK and Western Europe did. But initially we were playing it down, and then all of a sudden within a matter of days, really, it started to come to a front that, firstly, that Singapore event was going to have to be suspended. And then within about 2 weeks later, we basically had to do the same for our April event. So we went from being in all guns blazing, 100% focus on delivering those two events. And we're probably only 6 to 8 weeks beforehand at best, probably less than that. And to having to, within 2 weeks, basically cancelling, postponing both those events to what we thought 6 months later would be plenty large enough window to deliver them. And we're now sitting here today having to plan those events basically being completely virtual. And not much of that is actually up to us. It's basically up to decisions that have had to be made for obvious reasons. But it was quite a whirlwind through that period, I have to say. But we've been very fortunate that most of our delegates, our commercial partners, have been really, really supportive of the moves that we've had to make. And it's really given us the confidence to make some of the changes we've made to our strategy over the next 12 months. I think the benefit is in sports, because everyone is so affected by what happens from a live events perspective. Everyone just kind of gets it, and everyone's trying to work together to try and get the best out of the situation. And so we've been quite fortunate that whilst it did throw a big spanner in the works for us, we're in a pretty good position that even though the events won't look anything like we had planned, they will still be really exciting events, although delivered through a virtual platform.
Yeah, because you've got the Sports Pro Insider series as well, which is part of that virtual side of things, which has obviously had regular, and they're free as well. So anyone can get into them, and that's probably opened your kind of made it a bit more diverse in the kind of the amount and type of people that can come on board. You know, it's not just the ones who can take a few days off or a day off to come to a conference. How did those come about, and how have you found them so far?
Yeah, well, once everything became pretty clear that firstly those events weren't going to be happening, we wanted to do something from a virtual events perspective, but we didn't want it to be just a sort of flash in the pan thing to do quickly, just to fill a gap. We wanted to do something that we thought that could provide a lot of value, give us a regular voice in the industry, and also have a longer term future to something that we can commit to and potentially continue to deliver on for many, many months and if not years to come. So the goal was to create something that was regular, that touched upon all the different sectors that we do touch upon editorially, because most of our events are quite often built around digital and OTT and sports tech, but really from an editorial perspective, we cover a whole raft of different areas. And this gave us the chance to bring together those different sectors of our audience that we don't often get to talk to. In many ways, being a publisher, you have quite a one-way relationship with a lot of your audience. And this gave us a chance to bring together a big chunk of those people who come to our website to experience something a little bit different. And the response has been pretty incredible. I think we've had something like over 20,000 people register for the events we've had so far, and I think about 88 countries. So very diverse, very global. And it's just helped open our eyes to what our reach is really, given that as a media publishing business based in the UK, 75% of our audience is outside of it, which is typically quite surprising to people outside of the business, but also a little bit to us. And it's been a great validation of that, to know that we are connecting with people in those markets.
Yeah. And the interesting part, you had that decision of whether you make these webinars, these virtual events, free so anyone can sign up, and obviously you got value in that data and the what that means to partners who come on board versus others who have made it paid events to make sure they're trying, because obviously one of the things you want to do is keep some money. So why did you decide to go that side of the coin?
Well, look, the main decision for us was to do something that we provide a lot of value for. I mean, our website and our editorial content that we publish daily is free as well. We don't have a virtual or digital subscription product available currently on our website. So having that as free to access was something we were quite keen to do. And also there is a lot going on in the virtual space, and we knew that was coming. So we to start asking a premium for something like that, it could be a challenge in this sort of market, but we really wanted to see what sort of audience we could attract by having something free. If we wanted to go down the more targeted route, then we probably would have gone with a pay for option. So as I said, sort of talked about some of the numbers of people registering, what has helped us do is, again, the first party data we've been able to attract, the new eyeballs that we've been able to attract is in the several thousand that people we've never had as part of our audience, or not a part of our data set. So having access to who they are, what they do and how engaged they are with us has been hugely, hugely valuable for us as an engagement tool. And sure, from a commercial perspective, we're able to get some of our partners great insight as to not only if they're involved with any of our events virtually, they get to know who is and how long they're engaged with. It's those sorts of things you can't often get in any sort of environment, let alone a physical event, unless you spend a lot of money on technology.
No, definitely. And it's hopefully, you know, lead to a lot of change within the events industry. I think we did get a little bit settled into this is the kind of the way it always has been, and it's the way it's going to be forever. And it's kind of disrupted that industry completely. How much do you think is actually going to stay from this? And also, how do you run a decent webinar? There's so many webinars out there, and at the moment I've lost interest and given up after about 10 minutes on so many.
Yeah, there is a lot, and probably more than we really expected to come into the market. But look, now's as good a time for anyone to try their hand at it and see if they can do it. It's the same where we've seen a big increase in people who write thought leadership, and they publish those across their own social platforms and their own websites.
Start video podcast type things.
Exactly. So a lot more people doing these sorts of things, trying new ideas, seeing what the uptake's like. So we kind of expected there to be a lot of competition. But in terms of delivery, we spent a lot of time trying to make sure we found a platform that did what we wanted it to do. So we just didn't want to put a plug and play pretty generic sort of platform to use. We want to make sure there was an interactive element. We want to make sure that we could talk to people who were engaging with content, that the speakers could engage with it. We want to make sure the delivery was a bit higher class than you would get from some other platforms. And so we put a little bit of effort into that. And that probably actually took us the longest time to make sure we were comfortable with what we had. And then once we had that, it was relatively straightforward in getting things moving forward.
So do you think this is going to have a lasting impact? The last bit, we'll move on to some decent kind of business technology stuff in a second.
Sure. No worries. Well, I think there's definitely some value. What inherently we're going to see is as we get back to the new normal, Don't mind me, there's just an ambulance going by. As we get back to the new normal, you're going to see, obviously, a lot of people that came into the market that did their own type of own thing, whether it's webinars or virtual events, inherently those things are going to die off and disappear. So the value proposition will be for someone like us is if we can keep up a product that people like and provides value to, then we, from our personal perspective, we are quite keen to continue that virtual experience, as it does, from a marketing sense, help us bring more people into our marketing funnel and into our audience funnel than we would otherwise, just through general content. Because across of our events, our physical events, realistically, we can only, I think last year we brought about 3,000 people together across our physical events. As I said to you before, we've had over 20 odd thousand people register, and a majority of those have attended all these events already. So we're able to engage people that we didn't connect with before, and wouldn't have been able to engage with otherwise. So I think there's definitely a future for it, especially if you have already a captivated audience, which we're fortunate enough to by being a media publisher. Would it be for everyone? No, I don't think so. But as we also know, there's nothing beats the opportunity to meet people face-to-face and connect people in that way. And they'll never provide more value to an individual than a physical event will. But I think they can provide a lot of value to people and to businesses if they commit to them over the next year or two.
I can carry on talking about this for hours and hours and hours, having run events and things before, but I will move on. Obviously, you've been covering a lot of what other people are doing as well as yourselves over the last few months. Obviously, the use of technology is kind of suddenly being boosted. Clubs and organisations looking to use technology, their kind of buy-in or sales process has gone from months down to what can you deliver for us now. What kind of things have you seen that have been really exciting or innovative, using that crappy phrase, innovative, that's kind of really piqued your interest in the last couple of months?
Well, I think one of the things that was always going to be fairly obvious that would come out of this, and we've been covering a lot, is remote production, so remote broadcast production in particular. There's always been, well, not always been, but for the last few years, we've been seeing a lot of the quality technology that is available in the market for broadcasters to use to deliver great broadcast production for major events. But broadcasters have been quite reserved in implementing some of those. They don't want to mess with the norm. They were quite happy to do what they know. And now their hands been forced. We've seen BT Sport. We did a lot of coverage around what they've done to deliver the Bundesliga from a pure remote production perspective, going from, I think it was something like 70 or 80 people they would send to an event. They've dropped those numbers to about 10. And we did quite a big deep dive into their strategy. And it was just really, really interesting. And the technology has been there, but adoption is always the biggest challenge with any sort of technology. And this is really forcing their hand. So I think it's quite exciting to see that come into place. I think it will massively help, obviously on the cost front for many broadcasters. But what that will really do, particularly, is for the tier two and tier three broadcasters who don't have the budgets, broadcasters and rights holders, I should say, they don't have the budgets to put on the show that a BT Sport or a Sky or whoever works. It will make it more accessible for them to put on a similar broadcast product as remote production technology keeps being implemented. So I think that's been probably, I think, the most interesting to follow. And by looking at it, also there's clearly the fan noise side, which has been getting huge headlines, the opportunity to pump in artificial fan noise into...
I was going to ask you about that, with obviously La Liga last weekend, and I think, I mean, this will go out just after the Premier League starts, but similar moves being made in that. What did you make of the kind of the fake fans?
I'd heard of this sort of technology several years ago, but there wasn't much of an interest for it, for obvious reasons. Now, seeing it in practice, and the few examples I've seen, both from the Bundesliga in particular and now La Liga, it's actually really good. It's really good. And if you watch, there's a great video I can share with you after this, but from the La Liga that's shared, and they show both examples of the same production. And it doesn't compare. The fan noise being injected into it just has such a better experience.
I love the fact they booed at VAR a decision on one as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've had to get innovative pretty quickly. I mean, it links with human nature, right? By hearing the cheers in the crowd, you're going to get more excited by what's happened on the pitch. You take that away, and it's going to be missing something. So, I think it's been surprisingly very effective, and I think it's going to be here to stay for the short term, and will help us get through however many months that we're going to be in the situation where stadiums aren't going to be full.
Because the other side the broadcasters are also looking at is this whole, Sky Sports got their fan zone, so it's this whole social watching, because obviously you can't go to the pub to watch it, you can't go around your friend's house and watch it, so it's kind of, I've seen the technology around for a while and others pushing that, you know, this, I mean, I even like Facebook have been doing it in their VR, for example, for a while, but now it's come to the fore and it'll be interesting to see how that takes off as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to continue to grow. We've seen what platforms like Twitch have done in terms of bringing the live streaming product and bringing people a little bit closer together by having the instant messaging options available there, what Facebook Live has tried to do as well. And I think this just takes away several steps further. I think there will be huge, huge interest in this as a product. I think companies like Scenic, I think I've seen that do it, and there's a bunch of others now that are rolling it out. 11 Sports were one of the first to try this, I think, best part of 12 months ago. And from what everything I heard, it was quite a success. But it's just, again, it's that adoption, that getting people to understand that it's there, getting people to take it up and getting people to use it inherently will be the biggest challenge. But I definitely think it has a place, particularly if you think about future events and you want to connect with your friends, not just through this period, but if you've got friends all over the world. We've all been dialing into calls, I'm sure, globally with friends, particularly me being an Aussie, I've been calling people in Australia. The chance to be able to watch something, one of those major sporting events perhaps happening in Australia with my Aussie friends will be something I would absolutely love to have. And I haven't had that till this point. So I think it's going to be something that will be one to watch. I think it will be here to stay. And I think it'll be something that will continue to get momentum.
Yeah. And on the economic side as well, you know, we're talking positive about the role of technology that's going to be in, but the economic side, there is a big hit. There is going to be a big hit. What kind of things are you seeing, you know, because we're seeing kind of governing bodies hearing that they're going to be struggling, clubs are going to be struggling, agencies starting to close their doors. What are you seeing from what the people you're speaking to?
The main thing we're hearing is, particularly the major sports properties, is their businesses aren't in risk in terms of the longer-term prospect, but the issue is cash flow. They got their cash tied up in so many different deals that if the cash isn't coming in, they're in a real challenge. They're effectively, a lot of them are insolvent or nearly insolvent because they don't have the cash to pay their basic bills. So that's the biggest hurdle. Once we get through this period, I think for those bigger clubs and so forth, they'll get back to normal pretty quickly. But there's various financial institutions that are potentially going out of business because of this, because the deals aren't being done. And that impacts a lot of people. It's not just the clubs. It's the middlemen. It's the agency world that sits within the middle of that. They won't get their cut of the situation. Less sponsorship deals are being done. So that means that, again, less agency suppliers are being involved in delivering on their activations. Everyone is going to be affected by this for quite a long time. I think overall you'll see a bit of a correction in values for some of the deals, particularly for media rights. But there's been an ongoing challenge for the tier two, tier three sports properties to A, bring in sponsorship deals, and B, sell their media rights. And that's prior to all this kicking off. I have real concerns on how they will be able to manage to generate commercial income through the next couple of years. We've had just this week a number of rights holders, those tier two, tier three properties, reach out to us asking for advice on how to create OTT platforms, because they're basically trying to take their own destiny into their own hands to try and create their own commercial assets to sell, to try and make money from. Because if they don't, it's going to be a tough market out there.
Yeah. I mean, if they're just going to rely on other people giving them money, then yeah, that decision is out their hands and they need to diversify their income. And that might be one of the benefits, and people are coming, having to wake up to this whole digital transformation. You know, does OTT play a role in that? What do you think, going back to the OTT, you know, we hear the governing bodies, et cetera, also going direct to customer, it's the way forwards, but the kind of obviously the big money is still with the Sky Sports or whatever. How realistic is it for a tier two, tier three sport or team to develop their own product and get enough people signing up to make it pay?
Well, from the initial issues with that were always going to be the cost prohibition of being able to afford to build a platform yourself. The costs are coming down dramatically, so now it's making it more accessible. But I think what we've got to look at is it's not just about creating an OTT broadcast product. It's about putting the whole picture together, creating that one-stop shop digital offering where you can build in e-commerce solutions, bring in ticketing and merchandise and what else you can to try and generate a bigger share of wallet from your fans and from your potential customers. So the digital broadcast product, the OTT element of, say, the digital platform that these guys are going to be trying to create will be a key part of the platform to generate audience and to bring people to the platform. But the way they'll probably monetize it, I would think, will be largely through those other channels. Although they will have obviously advertising-led models and subscription models in there, I don't think they're going to play as big a part as people would think. Because when people think OTT, they immediately think about that broadcast offering, whether we want to be a Netflix of sports or Netflix of whatever sport they're part of. That's not reality, obviously. And I think it's going to be about that share of wallet strategy. If you can start bringing in a host of different revenue streams into your digital platform to flesh out how you make money out of your fans and out of your audience, that's going to be where the opportunity has to lie. And you're really only seeing sports properties looking at this now properly, other than a couple of the big guys. So if they get that right, then I think they've got a fighting chance. But they still have to use it, make sure that they put a lot of effort and energy into broadcasting and creating great assets through social. And social is effectively, you know, the new public broadcaster. It's the way that you can generate new audiences. So it has to be a funnel into the OTT platform. So using social as a key part of that marketing distribution channel will be a key driver to get people onto these digital platforms that should hopefully create new revenues for them.
Yeah. I mean, part of the challenge is just having enough people with the right knowledge in these organizations where often things are left to one or two people to try and drive and educate the rest, which, you know, can be an uphill challenge. So I know from the outside looking in sometimes working with people and, you know, the knowledge inside just isn't there. And part of it is understanding who your audience is, that first part of what you mentioned.
Yeah.
Even having a clue who they are, because most of the time they don't collect the data. They have no first party data. They just kind of sell tickets through a third party, use a bit of social media. And that's kind of, well, that's what we do.
Yeah, there's from a data perspective, there's now a number of companies and advisory services out there that can help you put that picture together. But there are still a load of gaps in businesses' understanding of who they connect with. I mean, we're spending a lot of time ourselves. We have to practice what we preach, and we preach a lot about this sort of stuff. And we spend a lot of time trying to look at the data and trying to make sure that we understand the customer's journey. And it's the same for a rights holder. So I think, yeah, the data is going to be a huge, huge part of that, both from a who they are from a first-party perspective, but also how they're consuming and engaging with the platform. But there's a lot of good sports properties who are doing a good job. There's great companies who are helping them, but we're still only at early stages with that. You talked about adoption within those rights holders. I mean, you are seeing a lot more rights holders look to the corporate world to bring in expertise to help them with this sort of stuff. And that's a great start. But pretty much every time I speak to anyone who's come from a corporate background into sports, I always ask them, how have you found it? How have you found the transition coming from corporate into the sports sector? And they always, always laugh out loud because it is such a different world. Mm. The challenges they have in explaining and articulating how to tackle the digital transformation, digital opportunities is probably the biggest challenge they do have when coming in. The opportunities there, the audiences are there. But how do they get buy-in internally is probably just as big a challenge as anything else.
Yeah, I think that's where the current crisis is probably going to be the catalyst for a lot of this, where they just have to understand it. Otherwise, there's going to be no business for anyone to work at it afterwards.
Absolutely.
Looking ahead to next year as well, you know, everyone's thinking 2021, Euros is going to be back on, the Olympics is going to happen. Everyone's going to be back. There's all these massive sports events that are going to happen. Is it?
Oh, that would be the billion-dollar answer if I had that one. I think we're going to see hybrid events. We're going to see for the next probably 6 to 12 months, realistically at least, these events that aren't pale in the comparison. I think the main litmus test is, can we get to Tokyo 2021 and deliver that? I think that's the main one we've got to look towards, and I think we'll get there. It'll be delivered, but it's your guess is as good as mine. We're just monitoring it month by month, week by week, day by day, trying to make sure we're keeping our ears to ground to see how things are progressing. We're inching forward.
Yeah. And just finally, I mean, what lessons do you think you take away for both Sports Pro and the business from this, what we've been through so far this year?
It links a little bit with what we were talking about before, but over the last few years, we've had huge growth in our events business. Our events business has been a huge catalyst for the wider business. But obviously, when the events business had to go on hold, then you have to make sure you've got other parts of the business that can continue to keep the business moving forward. So it's making sure that, like any business, you have diverse ranges of income streams and business units that can drive business for you. And that's what we've been focusing a lot of time with, not only the virtual events we talked about, but also how we make sure the plans that we had from a digital perspective, they've been on hold for a while we just prioritized our growth with our events. Now that's been put at sort of the start of the line. So I think for any business, it's making sure you've got a diverse range of revenue generation opportunities to keep your business moving forward. And we feel we're in a good, pretty good place, but we've got a lot of work to do. Like everyone, but we're quite excited about what's ahead for us.
Cool. Thank you very much, Nick. Always a pleasure catching up with you. Thank you for your words of wisdom.
Thanks, Dan.